From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made on Monday this week when Monroe County Public Health Commissioner Dr. Michael Mendoza urged county residents to stop using vape products. The announcement, one also made by Governor Andrew Cuomo, came after reports of about 500 cases nationwide of vaping-related lung disease. And this morning, CNN reported that a sixth person has died from that disease. Medical investigators have not yet been able to determine the direct cause, but many people who have been diagnosed with the ailment have reported vaping products with THC and/or with vitamin E oil. So a lot we know, but a lot we don't know. And the reports and the response have led for calls to ban e-cigarettes, vaping products from public spaces, college campuses, and more. It leads to the question, is the nationwide response proportionate to the actual health risk? This hour, we're joined by physicians who can help us understand what those health risks are and how prevalent they are. We're also going to talk to people who use e-cigarettes. And I know, listeners, if you don't vape yourself, you probably know someone who does. And if you want to join the conversation, you're certainly welcome to do that this hour. Let's welcome our guest. Dr. Michael Mendoza is the Monroe County Public Health Commissioner. Welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here.
Good afternoon, Evan.
Also with us is Dr. Nicholas Naka, who is an emergency physician and a medical toxicologist at the University of Rochester Medical Center. Dr. Naka, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Also with us is Scott McIntosh, an associate director of the Smoking Research Program at the University of Rochester Medical Center and the Wilmot Cancer Institute. Welcome back. Thanks for being here, Scott.
Thank you, too.
And Andy Ribble is here. Andy is the owner of Liquid Cloud Lounge and Greenhouse CBD. Welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thanks, Evan.
And Andy, are you someone who vapes?
I am.
Okay, so we're going to a lot to discuss this hour. Let's just start with the non-doc. How do you feel about it? Is this hysteria, or do you
absolutely.
Think that you do?
Absolutely.
You think this is hysteria?
Yeah, absolutely. Now, there's too many issues to talk about. Unfortunately, the reason why we're here is because of the most prevalent, which is the most recent deaths. And they have been linked to THC carts, which are completely unrelated to what we purchase and what we sell at my store. All of our products are regulated heavily with GMP, ISO 7 certifications, clean room facilities, and that type of thing. The black market cartridges are what's causing these problems with the deaths recently and the illnesses.
Dr. Mendoza, tell us a little bit more about the concerns you outlined this week and what you want to see happen now.
Well, you know, our perspective right now is that, you know, there is an ongoing investigation into what is causing these deaths. And yes, it does seem that THC black market cartridges are the smoking gun, if you will. But to my mind, you know, I have a high standard for what is evidence, and in my view, I think we still have some science and some investigation to obtain. And until we have that, you know, and in my role in the county, you know, I want to do what I can to keep everybody safe. And so if this means perhaps overreacting a little bit for now, I'm okay with that.
Okay. And so I'm sure people ask you the very simple and direct question, is vaping safe? The short answer is what to that, Doctor?
My answer is no. You know, we don't have good evidence right now for a lot of what is in the vape products. And it is true that you can tell what's in, you know, the ingredients, but I don't think we yet know what happens when you heat these chemicals up to these high temperatures and what happens over the long haul.
And to be clear on that, you know, some listeners might be thinking, well, ask him if smoking is safe. I think what I mean to be asking you is not whether vaping is safe vis-a-vis smoking. I think I mean to be asking, is it unsafe to the point where it might cause rapid and dangerous impacts? Is that fair? Is that kind of what we're looking at?
It appears to be true that vaping can cause rapid impacts, yes. I mean, we've long known that the long-term impact of vaping is to be determined, and now we're seeing some potentially short-term risks. So there's a lot that has to happen here, and this investigation is really what we're hoping to complete. But right now we're looking at what do we do to keep the public safe.
Dr. Naka, how do you feel about what we know and don't know so far about vaping?
I think we don't know a lot more than we do know. It seems that there are two separate issues here with some overlap, kind of like a Venn diagram with some overlap, where you have, as Dr. Mendoza said, we don't really know the long-term effects of vaping nicotine cartridges that have been around for a long time. But since June, we've seen this dramatic change in an uptick in both the severity and the frequency of this new disease process that we're currently trying to define. And this is what you're reading about in the news with the CDC and the FDA trying to define this disease process, trying to isolate a compound or a concentration of a compound that has changed and resulted in all these illnesses and a few deaths. So I think it's important to talk about both. I'm particularly concerned about our youth and some of the and vaping some of the nicotine products that are flavored and the marketing that goes into that. But this other entity where we're seeing people hospitalized and intubated and in ICUs, likely, again, as Dr. Mendoza said, it's an ongoing investigation and we have yet to pin it down perfectly, but it does seem likely to be related to clandestine or bootleg THC vape cartridges.
Do you think there is any reason to agree with people like Andy and the others we've already heard from who do vape, who say that this feels hysterical, this feels like too much, this feels like a national panic?
I don't know that I'll say that I perfectly agree with it, but I think that what they're pointing out is there are two conversations here to be had, possibly with some overlap in that we really don't know if there's some chronic low-level inflammation that's happening in the lungs of people who vape regularly, and then something changed, and now we have this really severe outbreak of illness, or is it two completely separate issues? It's not clear. It seems like our colleagues at University of Rochester, who do a lot of research into vape devices, have a feeling that there is some damage happening at a low level when people are vaping nicotine cartridges. But certainly what we've seen since June has been a dramatic change in even that. So there's two conversations to be had.
Scott, as the associate director of the Smoking Research Program at the University of Rochester Medical Center and the Wilmot Cancer Institute, when did vaping really sort of hit your radar?
About 10 years ago, mm-hmm. and then even more so 5 years ago, even 2 years ago in our world of public health science and all that, it's really been ramping up. And then now it's in the news all the time. So, of course, it's hot. And we've gotten funding from the National Cancer Institute and the FDA to do some FDA regulatory science. So we're living this every day.
I don't smoke and I don't vape, and I want to give you a story that is a data point of one, which is always, the smallest sample size possible. But in talking to a friend who does vape, here is his story that he tells me is pretty common among his friends who used to smoke. He said he used to be kind of a social smoker, didn't consider himself addicted, but didn't really want to keep smoking, and thought, I'm going to switch over and I'm going to vape, and that'll take some of the desire to, to have like an oral fixation, something away, and, maybe it'll be healthier for me. And he said the result has been he doesn't smoke at all anymore. He is totally addicted to nicotine now because of how fast he could vape and how much he can vape. And he had no idea when he started vaping that he would consume as much as he does. I said, well, don't they kind of put it in, and look how ignorant I am, in units where it would be the equivalent of the nicotine of a cigarette, et cetera. He says, yes, and you can blow through it very, very easily. And he does. And so his view is that it's actually helped him stop smoking. It has heightened his actual nicotine addiction. And he is worried that if there is a rush to ban before there's better research, that people will be impacted who are actually addicted. That is a data point of one. I'm wondering how common that kind of story that you hear is.
Yes. And there's so many different things to say in response to that. So let me just hit some of the high points that I'm thinking of. 70% of youth that become regular smokers started with e-cigarettes. And these are really recent data.
They go from vaping to cigarettes?
Yes. And so that, I hate to use the old chestnut, a gateway drug, but there's that phenomenon is happening. Nicotine does affect adolescent brains severely in the development of their brains. So that's a huge concern. And a key message to say here today is if you're scared about e-cigarettes and want to stop that, don't think, well, I'll just go back to regular cigarettes because that's, trading one poison for another. There is help available to get off of a nicotine addiction. So there's a behavioral aspect of what you were mentioning in your N of one study, the hand to mouth, the don't want to lose that friend that you're accustomed to and all that. But when it's time to quit smoking or quit vaping, beating the addiction to nicotine, there's the New York State Quit Line, and nysmokefree.com has resources. Locally at the University of Rochester Medical Center, we have face-to-face counseling and other strategies covered by insurance. So we want to get that message out there.
What do you make of the calls to ban? Do you support calls to ban for now?
Oh, I do. And there's in conversations today and yesterday, they're talking about, well, the stock market for tobacco companies dropped off a cliff yesterday when President Trump said that he wants to ban e-cigarettes. But almost immediately, it shot back up. And one theory is, oh, well, people are thinking they'll just stop vaping and go back to smoking combustible cigarettes. That might be true. But what we don't want to lose in the translation here is that switching is bad. You know, the message needs to be to quit all forms of nicotine.
Listeners, it's 844-295-TALK, toll-free, 844-295-8255, 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. Dr. Mendoza, on the subject of a ban, to Scott's point, the president has talked about this. We could see something on the national level. Do you want to see something on the national level? What is the local role in sort of addressing this?
You know, the local role right now is in trying to contribute to the investigation into what is the smoking gun, so to speak. You know, where the president's going with this. You know, I think we can all agree that we don't want our young people smoking, and we don't want our young people using nicotine. I think we can all agree on that. And the role of flavors is pretty clear. The way that the companies have marketed, the way they've used these flavors, and you can speak to the prevalence of flavors.
Well,
it's a big deal.
Can I interject that we have 5,000 teenagers that die every year from alcohol, but I don't see that industry being regulated when I can buy Fruit Loops vodka and Saturday morning Lucky Charms beer. I mean, kids are going to do what kids are going to do. So, that's an issue of parenting.
So hold on a second. There's a couple of points there, Andy. Even if you're right, and you are right, that doesn't mean that it should be suddenly okay if people are getting flavored vape products.
First of all, I agree 100% about the
teen situation.
I don't
think that's a good way to reason. I think, because my guess is Dr. Mendoza might say yes, and we should probably be a little stricter or a little bit more careful about what we do with flavored alcohol or those kind of things. But what do you make of what the actual experts at the table are saying about their concerns, the health concerns, and in particular, protecting kids?
See, that's the problem with this discussion, and I don't mean to discredit it in any way, because I think you guys have very valid points, and I agree with all of them, okay, with the exception of the overall ban, okay? And the reason being that we're having an issue is teens. That's the biggest issue, and I think that's what we can agree on, is that's the teen vaping, teen nicotine addiction is a problem. And we, as my shop, we will not sell to anyone underage. And I think that the biggest problem is that they're trying to ban adults from doing something that has proven to be a successful cessation tool to removing yourself from smoking. And I know I'm not using the right verbiage for you, Scott.
I think Scott's just disagreeing that it's removing people from smoking, but you're saying, you talking anecdotally, or are you talking about with research?
No, I'm talking anecdotally.
Okay.
I mean,
okay.
You know, the oral fixation, the nicotine, getting the inhalant of the nicotine to curb those appetites that you have when you're a smoker.
Okay.
I tried everything. I tried patches, pills, gums, hypnosis, acupuncture. I smoked for 30 years. I started when I was 13, even though I knew it was illegal. The reason I did it was because it was illegal. And I didn't, you know, my parents, that's what we did.
You know,
you break the law. I tried everything. I even said, when it hits a dollar, I quit smoking. I'm almost 50 years old. I quit 6 years ago because of vaping, and I haven't had one cigarette since.
Why was that successful for you?
Because I was able to get away from the tobacco flavor, but I was still able to satisfy my urges, and I was given a visual, which I'm sure is some psychological. I'm seeing vapor come out of my mouth. It's like a cigarette. And then with the oral fixation, I'm satisfying that as well.
But you're still addicted to nicotine.
Yeah, that's okay.
It's okay.
Well, I don't think that nicotine in small doses is harmful for you. I mean, there's nicotine present in a lot of different vegetables that we eat. I mean,
okay, so what's a small? So how much were you smoking when you were smoking cigarettes? How much were you smoking?
More than a pack a day.
Okay, how much do you vape?
Okay, now there's stages of nicotine that you can buy. So the problem that we have with the higher levels of nicotine, your Juul products, they're 50 milligrams of nicotine, 0.5%. I started at 12. And a tobacco flavor, and I hated it. I said, I can't do this. It tastes like a cigarette. I want a cigarette. Then I went back to the shop that I was purchasing this from, and he said, try a fruit flavor. I tried a fruit flavor, and I was like, oh my God, this is satisfying me. I don't have a desire for a cigarette now. Anyway, I have lowered my nicotine level to a point where I'm virtually vaping for the oral fixation. I don't have any nicotine in my products.
Okay, but why do we even have those sledgehammer 0.5s or whatever on the market? Because I hear that in Europe and other places, everything is at the lower dose.
Because they're scumbags. They shouldn't have put those products onto the market. Juul is detrimental to this industry because of what they did. Not only their marketing practices, the higher levels of nicotine. Here's the thing. If any one of you have ever smoked, the first cigarette you ever had, you got that head rush because, wow, that rush of nicotine gave you a little bit of a buzz, for lack of a better term, okay? That nicotine, whatever it did with your dopamine receptors, made feel like you were euphoric. That's what the Juul offers, is a little bit of a buzz. That's why it created this problem with the teenagers, which we...
But do you support, then, banning the higher level?
Oh, absolutely. Get rid of it.
Okay. Would that satisfy you, Dr. Mendoza?
The higher level nicotine products?
Absolutely. Get rid of them.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Yeah, that I'm perfectly 100%. We don't sell Juul in my store. Absolutely not.
But Andy's saying, get rid of those, but keep the lower levels on the market.
I've got some information that I'd like to share with you, and I'll actually email you all the documents that I'm going to reference here today. The Royal College...
Careful, you're with the actual experts, but go ahead.
I am, and I'm citing the experts that are in the UK. Okay. So the Royal College of Physicians is, I would say, a body that is reputable, and would you agree?
In Europe, yeah.
Okay, in Europe, okay. There's a lot of information in here, but there's some key recommendations and some key points that they concluded with a study that they did back in 2016.
Do your best to sum it up.
Okay, I'm trying, and I don't want to wait too long. But it says, this is the most important thing, in my opinion. The hazard to health arising from long-term vapor inhalation from e-cigarettes today is unlikely to exceed 5% of smoking tobacco, traditional tobacco. So that, in my opinion, says it's 95% healthier, okay? And then they're following than traditional tobacco. Don't make that face, Evan.
That felt like a leap, but okay, I'm still listening. Did that read as 95% healthier? I'm trying to make sure I...
Less deadly.
Okay. Less deadly.
Then they say, however, in the interest of public health, it is important to promote the use of e-cigarettes, NRT, which are nicotine replacement therapies, and other non-tobacco nicotines as widely as possible to substitute. So they're actually promoting the use of e-cigarettes as a
cessation tool.
Absolutely.
Do you have a problem with that, Scott?
Well, first of all, the UK and the US are looking at this very differently. And the UK has really been a champion pro-vaping, leaning towards pro-vaping.
Is that because they're not in bed with big tobacco?
Irrespective of that, they truly believe in a harm reduction strategy, and they believe that, you know, using words like safer than regular smoking, et cetera, is the way to go. And they've been that way for years. And whereas we see it as an addiction model, and now that we're finding all these things that are definitely toxic, including carcinogens that are in there, that a better phrase might be less deadly, or now maybe in some cases as deadly. We're finding things like there's six times in our own Raman laboratory here, six times as much copper is in e-cigarettes versus combustible cigarettes. So if copper is bad for you, or if you're just talking about copper, that's worse. Sorry, just one more quick point. When you talked about adult cessation, that has been proven for that, and the UK actually would probably support that statement, and the Royal College that you cited. However, the research is mixed, and it continues to be mixed, but maybe more important to this conversation is that the FDA still hasn't approved e-cigarettes as a demonstrated strategy for quitting.
Yeah, but I have firsthand experience. I've got thousands of people I've helped quit smoking.
Okay.
Switching to e-cigarettes.
I'm going to get some phone calls here, but the harm reduction, that's an interesting phrase, because when we think about opioids, when we think about heroin, there's a debate going on right now, and largely those in favor of more harm reduction strategies aren't really winning it for the most part. I mean, there's different levels of this. Harm reduction in the extreme way in heroin, for example, is what we talk about, the supervised use clinics, which aren't even legal right now, even though some proponents would like them to be. That would be under the umbrella of harm reduction as opposed to quitting or eliminating a habit. Do you think, Scott, you have enough evidence to say that vaping can be harm reduction for smokers?
we don't know yet. And rather than being lab rats, because we're going to see these problems coming out later, for example, we know that these heavy oils that we're finding in the THC and stuff, and I'm sure we're going to get more into the weeds on that, there's still oils in other products too. Those respiratory problems and lung diseases won't happen for a while, but we expect those to happen. And, you know, why a message for healthcare providers is, why recommend something that's a little bit less deadly or comparatively less deadly or whatever, when the advice should be to get off of an addictive product that probably has deadly toxins?
Okay. And before I get to Mark and Anthony on the phone, we did hear, you know, Andy's point that this is largely a concern nationally because a concern about teenagers' addiction. I'm not sure, and I don't want to speak for you, Dr. Mendoza. Do you agree with that, or is this a concern for everybody who's vaping?
This is a concern for everybody. You know, I can see the complexities here, and I've got an N of probably 20 patients who say, I was able to stop using combustible cigarettes and I started to use vape. That's not the same as me prescribing a vape. You know, we're kind of heading down this harm reduction approach, and I think there's role for that. But no, we don't have the science to say that vaping nicotine in the current forms is safe.
Okay. Do you want to add to that as well, Dr. Naka?
I just want to echo that we just don't know, I think, is the answer. We know a lot about combustible cigarettes and how harmful and deadly they are. We just don't know with e-cigarettes in the arena of the conversation we're having right now when we're referring to the nicotine-based e-cigarettes. We just don't know what kind of harm they can cause in the long term. And, you know, I think that if we start there, that we just don't know what these cause, that might be an influential factor in the conversation as whether or not they should be completely banned.
Okay, to the phone calls we go. Mark in Rochester first. Go ahead, Mark.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'm a substance use researcher at University of Rochester Medical Center. And I'm finding myself, well, I hear there's a lot of agreement among the group there. I'm finding myself agreeing with most of the points that are being made. But I think maybe a little more focus on Scott's public health points would be useful. If we don't know how many people are getting off of cigarettes using vaping, there might be some significant unintended consequences of a full ban and this hard move to demonize vaping, which is what happens. I mean, this does smack of drug hysteria. My second point is that will this not create a black market for vaping products? That tends to be what happens in these cases if a full ban's enacted, and that would just be the worst case scenario.
Okay, Mark, thank you for that. Scott, let's hit his first point. If we don't know right now, if we don't have enough research to say that we know roughly how effective vaping is at actually cessation of smoking, but we know that it may work for some, is there a big unintended possible consequence of a full ban for the people who benefit from vaping?
It will define benefit. But okay. So I would say, again, key messages for the public and for healthcare providers, don't switch back to combustible cigarettes. Instead, push the message that you can beat this nicotine addiction.
But you're not giving them an option if you take away their nicotine.
There are seven FDA-approved products, and six of them have nicotine in them.
And speaking firsthand, those remedies did not work for me.
Yeah,
and I know hundreds of people who have been down that same path. Patches didn't work. Pills didn't work. You know, I told you I went to acupuncture. I went to see a little guy who threw needles at me, and I walked out feeling like $1 million and quit smoking for about 6 weeks. But after that, I went right back to cigarettes.
I hear you. And I wanted to say this earlier, too. Congratulations for getting off the combustibles. That's not an easy thing to do.
No.
But I think what the public health message is, we need to find a safe alternative that has nicotine in it. Because like you say, you might be on nicotine the rest of your life. If it's only nicotine and it's only things that are safe, like the FDA-approved products, or maybe in the future, a vaping product that doesn't have all the crap in it, that would be harm reduction.
Right, but to my point earlier, that the e-liquid manufacturers that we purchase from that are on a federal inventory list, they have to submit their their ingredients. They have to get PT1 numbers or TP1 numbers, which are tobacco product index numbers. They are regulated in their clean room facilities. They're regulated. I mean, there's really only four ingredients in there: propyl glycerin, vegetable glycerin, nicotine, and flavoring. And the flavorings are all the same stuff we put in our food. Now, I understand there's a concern, but the concern isn't with respectable e-liquid manufacturers who are making a product that is as safe as the federal government saw fit at the time. Now, I know they're changing the rules and want PMTA testing done, but an all-out ban is going to create a huge black market because people aren't going to stop. That's the biggest problem, and we're already seeing deaths from people who are using black market products.
Dr. Mendoza can probably address the latter point that you just made, but I just wanted to say when things are approved for food, that means ingesting, whereas we don't know yet the effects of heating and inhaling those, and that kind of leads into Dr. Naka's research on the fats and the oils, et cetera.
Well, I can't call it my research. What I can say is that as we've watched over the past few months, now we're stepping into a little bit of a separate conversation here. This acute illness, this acute respiratory illness that's landed many people in the hospital and intubated and requiring supplemental oxygen and had six deaths associated with it. As we've watched this roll out and we've watched the New York State public health officials and the Wadsworth lab try to tackle this problem, which I think has been really cool to watch. They've done so very quickly and effectively. They have come out to the CDC and reported to the CDC some of their preliminary results that they have found a lot of samples of black market vape cartridges that have a high level of vitamin E acetate, and that's important to say it's vitamin E acetate, it's not just vitamin E. And whether or not that is the causative agent behind this new acute illness that we're learning about is up for debate, and the government has been very careful not to overstate that whether or not that's the case, but you know, so again, this is a little bit of a separate conversation from the ban on e-cigarettes.
Dr. Mendoza, are you concerned about a black market or any other unintended consequences?
Yeah, no, I think with every decision that we make, and certainly any kind of advisory that we would make that is as broad-reaching as the one we did on Monday, we have to be cognizant of the unintended consequences. And that's why, you know, I've been trying to be careful that the basis for our advisory is that we have this unexpected spike in fatalities and illnesses. That is the immediate goal, and we have an investigation ongoing, and my immediate goal is to get to the bottom of that while the vaping larger debate rages on.
Listeners, if you want to join the conversation, we've got some emails we'll read, and after our only break of the hour, we're going to come back to your phone calls, so Anthony in Rochester, hang there. If you want to call the program, it's 844-295-TALK. That's toll-free, 844-295-8255. 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. We're talking about the calls to ban vaping and e-cigarettes, what that means, concerns that local experts have, possible impacts, consequences, and more. You just heard Dr. Mike Mendoza, Monroe County Public Health Commissioner. Dr. Nicholas Naka is here, who is an emergency physician and medical toxicologist at the University of Rochester Medical Center. Scott McIntosh is the associate director of the Smoking Research Program at the University of Rochester Medical Center and the Wilmot Cancer Institute. And Andrew Ribble is the owner of Liquid Cloud Lounge and Greenhouse CBD, and says that vaping helped him stop smoking combustible cigarettes. Let's get our only break of the hour, and we're back to your feedback next. Coming up in our second hour, Canada will have a national election on October 21st. It's a six-week national campaign, start to finish. Can you imagine if that happened in the United States? Our campaigns go forever. We're going to talk about the strengths and the weaknesses of the two systems of choosing national leaders next hour on Connections. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson, and let's get some more of your feedback. Anthony in Rochester, next on the phone. Go ahead, Anthony.
Yeah, how you guys doing?
Good.
Go ahead. Good. So another thing that I'm worried about, especially being a local vape shop owner, is if they implement this flavor ban, what's going to happen to all these companies that have spent millions of dollars, you know, setting up the proper labs to, you know, such as Bad Drip, that's a local juice company, or I know the guy from Liquid Cloud Lounge has DTF juices, and, you know, what's going to happen to all the mom and pop shops that, you know, have put their livelihood into this stuff, and, you know, 96% of my business is, you know, selling flavored e-juice to people, 18 and older, and soon 21 and older. You know, what do you think the impact is going to be on them? Because I know personally that if they wipe out the flavored juices, I think we're going to see a tremendous, you know, decline in business here. And even though I have a tobacco license, I choose not to sell combustible cigarettes and go to these other alternatives because I feel like they're effective. And, you know, I'm a past smoker that has used this stuff and believe in this stuff to help people quitting smoking combustible cigarettes.
Okay, Anthony, thank you for that. Guests mm-hmm. want to weigh in on some of what you heard there.
Yeah, Anthony, I can sum it up in one word. We're out of business, or one phrase. I mean, we can't support. I mean, especially my e-liquid line, Bad Drip. I mean, I know we have international contacts and we sell our products overseas, but once the U.S. is down, we're dead. That's it in a nutshell.
Okay.
And there's 35 or 40,000 people like Anthony that are going, are we going to be in business tomorrow?
Dr. Mendoza, is that one of the things we have to accept as a society if we're going to make decisions on a medical basis like this?
If we made decisions purely based on a medical basis, the answer would be yes.
Yeah, but we don't because cigarettes are still in the market.
Right, and that's my point. You know, when we look at the global arena of public policy, you know, I have the luxury of being a doctor and, you know, having sort of the responsibility of talking about that perspective. But, you know, it is much more complicated. And no, I do not want to see local businesses go out of business. But I am more importantly than that, I want to see our local public be healthy.
No, we totally agree. We totally agree. And I think that that's kind of the, you know, I think that's what needs to happen is education, you know, understanding each other's perspectives and coming up with a solution. Prohibition is not a solution. I mean, how many people died from bathtub gin during the prohibition of alcohol? I mean, that's what's going to happen. You know, we're concerned about these black market carts that have killed six people. What if it's six people a day? Because that's what's going to happen is there's going to be products. And it's just like...
You mean the less regulated, the less in the light things are, the more dangerous they are.
Absolutely. That's what the problem is to begin with. I mean, we don't have a problem with regulations. We do have a problem giving it over to big pharmaceutical companies because then it doesn't become cost effective. But as manufacturers of this product, we can come up with a set of standards that provide a product that is going to be healthier than traditional tobacco that is going to adhere to these principles or these quality standards. We don't have an issue with that. The issue we have is why are they saying that they're going to ban flavors?
But let me go ahead and get we've got sort of just a tidal wave of feedback from a lot of different directions. Here's a pediatrician, Dr. Dave Topa, who writes, as a pediatrician in the community, I can attest that vaping has been a significant issue among teens for at least 3 years, and that pediatricians are so frustrated that it has taken this long for the public to wake up to the crisis. A whole cohort of children is being endangered so that unscrupulous companies can make a quick buck. Flavored vapes should be banned outright, given their appeal to kids. I cannot accept keeping these products on the market for the benefit of adults to the detriment of children. Dr. Mendoza, agree or disagree?
You know, I see adults and kids, so I can see where Dave is coming from, but, you know, we need more research. That's the bottom line. And, you know, the call from President Trump was quick. I was surprised that came out yesterday. I'd love to hear more about the motivations behind all that. On the face of it, it does sound like a good idea, but I do think we need more research. And, you know, for adults, we need more research.
Dr. Naka, flavored vapes, are they a special category of concern?
They have been implicated in the past as potential causative agents to an inflammatory response, and I think that's the target of some of the research that's going on at the University of Rochester right now. It takes time to flesh these things out. I do want to point out this conversation has really gone towards whether or not we're going to ban e-cigarette, nicotine-based e-cigarettes, and it's gone away from this kind of epidemic that has brought this conversation to light. So maybe it's a good thing that this conversation is now in the limelight, but I think that since June, the 400 cases of acute illness that have come into our hospitals and the 6 deaths, while there may be some overlap there, it is a slightly different conversation.
Okay. Scott, concern about flavored e-cigarettes?
Yes. And at our newly funded Center for Research on Flavored Tobacco, or CROFT, which is one of 16 tobacco centers on regulatory science in the country, we are going to be looking at that. We can't look at it fast enough. I mean, this is a problem right now, but we'll be looking at the toxicity that's in the different flavors, flavonoids, really down into the weeds there. We're going to be looking at characterizing the flavors and their impact on behavior. We'll be determining the respiratory health effects caused just by the flavors. And then finally, looking at the flavors, the different ones, maybe cinnamon's worse than vanilla, et cetera. And then the black market ones, creme brulee, Captain Crunch flavors, what are the messagings that need to go on to packaging or to the public, to describe that, and what are their reactions to those things? So it's a 5-year project. We need these answers now.
Let me get back to your phone calls and Chi Lai. This is Mike. Go ahead, Mike.
Hey, good afternoon, guys. How are you?
Very good. Thanks for calling. Go ahead.
I was a pack a day smoker, and then I got myself down to a pack a week. Then I started vaping. I started at 12 milligrams. Then I got down to 1.5, and I stopped. I could have probably never stopped smoking without vaping, but I could not imagine it going away. I don't do it anymore. I've stopped. But I see people that are in their 60s and 70 years old walk around with a vape pipe now instead of a pack of cigarettes in their front pocket. So, and I just think if you were to take it all away, I don't know what would happen, but it would certainly be bad because the black market, I mean, you can make this stuff in your kitchen, but you don't know what people are putting in, like a legit vape shop. Also, the other point I'd like to bring up, New York State makes $4 per pack on taxes on a pack of cigarettes. So if we're going to ban vaping products, why don't we just ban tobacco, period?
Amen.
Well, so let's hit that.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, I do. And
you got to follow the money. If you go to the Pennsylvania state line, cigarettes are $6 a pack. Up in New York State, they're around $10.50 to $11 a pack. It's a lot of money the government makes off of it.
That is not wrong. Mike, thank you for that. Yeah. And Mike's right to point out the disparity. And Mike's last point there, let's hit this. Let me read an email that kind of dovetails what Mike is saying. Larry says, I'm 70 years old. I've never smoked or vaped. There seems to be an inconsistency among the panel's comments. How can we argue for banning e-cigarettes and not ban all tobacco products? That's from Larry. Dr. Mendoza?
This is one of those things where, I would love to see the root of the problem here is addiction, I think, and nicotine addiction is the real problem. I'd love to ban cigarettes, honestly.
Me too.
But that is going to be a tall order. And at the end of the day, we've got to look at pragmatic, ways to find and treat nicotine addiction. And then the other addictions that follow. And as we've talked about on this program before, addiction is not something that we can take lightly.
No, but let me ask all of you about Mike's other point here, which is that there is a historic inconsistency that the government has when it bans things for either moral or health reasons if they can figure out how to tax it. And here's a good example. The government says they don't like when people gamble unless they can figure out how to make money off it. And online poker takes off 15 years ago. The government really couldn't figure out how to tax it, so they banned it. Bill Frist and senators announced this ban. Overnight, the party pokers of the world were gone. It was a moral victory. Meanwhile, there's off-track betting. There's the lottery. There's all the – so what Mike is saying is when it comes to cigarettes, there's a pretty hefty tax, and it varies by states, but they're less keen – to talk about banning an actual combustible tobacco product because they can tax it and make money off it.
Well, it's just in that.
Is there an argument there?
Well, yeah, but it's not just that. It's the fact that the biggest lobby in the country is big tobacco. Who has put these politicians in place? I mean, they're not going to ban their sugar daddy, for lack of a better term.
Is that fair, Mike?
I hear you. Yeah, I think so.
Okay. I mean, so big tobacco is pretty powerful.
We can all agree on that.
And now they own Juul, and this problem that they've created with this nicotine addiction is now something that they get to fix, put the rest of us out of business, and then have their monopoly back. I mean, I'm not trying to create some kind of conspiracy theory, but follow the money. Figure out who lost. They lost 27% of their market share. That's billions of dollars from big tobacco. They came up with a solution. The solution was to get into e-cigarettes, create a problem so they could have to fix the problem. They're the only ones that can afford to fix the problem, so that leaves them the only ones standing at the table.
Because the customers will be driven back to them.
One or the other. They're going to either go back to cigarettes or they're going to go to their products that they can afford to produce, according to the... Because right now the ban is for flavors because it's approaching children. But the problem, like doctor said, it was addiction. The people are still going to be addicted. They're allowing for tobacco-flavored e-cigarettes to be left on the marketplace. Well, who does that leave? That leaves big tobacco. So it's just putting the rest of us out of business and creating this crisis.
All right, so some medical questions. George in Rochester says he's been vaping for 3 years. He stopped last week. Should he get an x-ray or a checkup? He has concerns about THC and vitamin E, but he does not feel sick. What will we tell George?
So my opinion on that would be you do not need an empiric x-ray if you're asymptomatic. And, you know, following with your primary care physician as you regularly would, it'd be appropriate. If you develop any symptoms, I guess this gives me the opportunity to point out the symptomatology that we've seen in the cases of vaping-associated pulmonary illness that have come to University of Rochester, which really are patients with GI distress, so gastrointestinal symptoms like nausea, vomiting, diarrhea, abdominal pain, fevers, and then eventually they do develop a shortness of breath that can progress to a severe illness. So those would be the things to look out for if you have had a recent history of vaping a THC product or a nicotine-based product and you're concerned that maybe you're developing an illness.
Scott?
First of all, congratulations for quitting. And a good message to follow up on that with would be it's never too late to quit. So to everything that Dr. Naka was just saying, you know, if there are problems, if there are no problems, it's a good time to quit, but it's never too late.
Steve in Rochester, next on the phone. Go ahead, Steve.
Yeah, thank you, Evan, and thank you for a balanced discussion as usual. I would just like to make a point, though, that I think would run counter to perhaps some of the vape shop owners or maybe one of your panel members, that I recognize we live in a free market where there are market forces and such, but I think people have a moral obligation to recognize that we do not understand the toxicology of inhaled flavors. And to suggest otherwise is disingenuous, especially for teenagers who make poor decisions, we realize. They don't realize that mango explosion or whatever it is has nothing to do with mango. And we don't know what happens when that chemical is ignited or combusted and the vapor is inhaled into the lungs. So if you're a vape shop owner, even if you're legit, I don't think you can, in good conscience, sell these flavorings beginning tomorrow. I think you should have taken them off the market yourself. So I get the free market and the things will get figured out on their own, but I think it's really a moral obligation we have to study the toxicology of these flavorings before we unleash them on the market for kids for sure, but even for adults who usually are not well informed about things like this.
Steve, thanks for the phone call. Let's let all of our guests weigh in. Dr. Naka, you want to start there?
Yeah, go ahead. So I just want to agree with you on some things and then clarify a couple other things. So these are not combusted. They're actually aerosolized. And even though they're called vapes, it's not truly a vapor. It's a suspension of liquid within a gas. And so that makes it a little different from a toxicology standpoint. But I think your point is well taken. I think it would be... it would be incorrect to say that vaping of any kind is safe and healthy. But the take-home message should be that in the wake of this recent illness that's gained all this media attention, the acute and proximate danger to your health would be vaping a bootleg THC product. You know, I'll dovetail onto that. What we've been doing at University of Rochester is we've been taking care of these patients at the bedside. We've been investigating this in the laboratory with research, and we've been engaging with our public health officials to try to come to a conclusion as to what it is that's actually causing this acute illness and has killed six people. And it's an active, ongoing investigation that we don't have a solid answer to.
Okay. Andy, what do you say? His call for you as a shop to take them off the shelf now?
Well, you know what? I can understand his point, and there is a moral code to that. But the other side of that is that it is, regardless of what the data supports right now, or what information we're going to gather from this, the research that I've done says that the long-term effects are unknown, but are considerably better than traditional smoking. Okay, combustible cigarettes.
How do you say they're better if they're also unknown?
I'm going based off the data that was given to me, that I pulled down from the internet, which is from the Royal College of Physicians, when it says that it's deemed 99, there are other reports as it's 98% healthier than traditional tobacco, less harmful. It's not healthier, less harmful.
Yeah.
Okay. So with that said, I was unable to smoke. I was unable, or to quit smoking. I was unable to tie my shoes, walk a flight of stairs, any of those things without losing my breath. As soon as, within a month and a half of vaping, I was able to run. I was able to play basketball with my girls. I was at, you know.
So that's the moral side of it. When Steve's challenging you, you're saying that you've seen a benefit.
I've got a 78-year-old man who lives next door to me who smoked for 55 years. In the last 6 months, he's been vaping, okay? His color is better. His overall well-being is better. He looks, it's a transformation that I didn't expect to see. And he was gray. He was washed out. And because traditional tobacco kills you, 480,000 people a year.
We can't argue with that last point. Is that data point with his older neighbor, is that compelling to you, Dr. Mendoza?
It's not compelling. I mean, I understand. I understand where you're coming from. I understand the selection bias, essentially. That's a scientific term for how, the N of one is so compelling. And stories, let's face it, are compelling. But as a scientist, as a physician, my standard for science is quite high. And, guidelines in the lexicon of medical evidence are relatively low. We look for real scientific trials that have been controlled in all the other ways that we make sure good science is good science, and that is not yet good science.
Okay.
No.
Scott, you want to jump in here? Go ahead.
Yeah, just quickly. We know more than the public thinks we know. I mean, we know that these products have carcinogens. We know that they cause oxidative stress, which leads to problems in respiratory system, and can lead to things, a popular thing people have heard about is popcorn lung. So it's not like, the jury's still out. Let's wait 10 years until the first cases of cancer occur. In a recent paper by the American Heart Association, they determined that e-cigarettes alone, or both together, all three of those cause cardiac problems. So that it's not that the jury's out. It's that the evidence of the harm is growing.
Okay. Well, let me get one more phone call in here. This is from Al in Greece. Go ahead, Al.
Hey, Evan. Thanks again for a balanced program. I just had a question from a lay person. I keep hearing that the problem might be these additives, be it vitamin E. I'm wondering, why is vitamin E even added to these vapes? Can someone explain to me the whole process? I'm completely naive about it.
Okay, I can speak to that a little bit. We think that vitamin E acetate may be something that bootleg production manufacturers are using to adjust the viscosity of a vape cartridge that they're making, again, without any regulation. That is our suspicion. It is not fact. And again, the data that's come out that suggests that a lot of the cartridges that have been seized in relation to vaping-associated pulmonary illness have vitamin E acetate in them is not perfect, in that there are patients with vaping-associated pulmonary illness that provide samples of cartridges that do not contain vitamin E acetate. So again, it's all speculation, and we at this point have more questions than answers.
Dr. Mendoza, how fast do we think we can see a national ban? What's realistic?
Oh, the national ban, I think, will take a while. I think the president, sort of launched, shot across the bow. But, I think that's an important conversation to have, and I think we're having some of it here. It is coming in the aftermath of this epidemic. And I think, as, you've pointed out, it's confounding the issue here. I think we've got to look at this as an acute problem and a chronic problem. And my approach, my goal in the health department right now is to really get to the bottom of the acute problem. And, literally just off last hour, I was on the phone with the other commissioners of public health across the state, and I shared with them a document that I've developed along with some colleagues across the country on how do we do the case investigations to try to understand the cases that we might be seeing in this community so that we can contribute to the investigation. So hopefully we get to the bottom of it and withdraw the advisory if that's appropriate. But for right now, we've got to get through this acute part while the chronic debate rages on.
And for people who are trying to kick nicotine right now and they're thinking about vaping, you would tell them what?
Go see your doctor. I would say strongly reconsider. If you are vaping now, strongly reconsider that. I would urge them not to in the face of this acute safety concern that we have yet to get to the bottom of. But more importantly, there are FDA-approved, sound science-driven ways to stop smoking, and I would much rather put preference on those.
I want to thank all of our guests for having what I think has been a fair and productive conversation, even when there are differences of views. And I want to thank them all for being here. That's Dr. Mike Mendoza, the Monroe County Public Health Commissioner. As always, Dr. Mendoza, thank you.
Thank you.
Our thanks to Scott McIntosh, Associate Director of the Smoking Research Program at the University of Rochester Medical Center and the Wilmot Cancer Institute. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Dr. Nicholas Naka, who is an emergency physician and a medical toxicologist at URMC. Thank you, Dr. Naka.
Thanks for having me.
And Andrew Ribble. Andy is the owner of Liquid Cloud Lounge and Greenhouse CBD. Appreciate your perspective. Thanks for being here.
Thank you. No, it was great. I had a lot of fun.
All right, short break. More connections coming up.